Before we get started with today's show, remember, Jalen and Jacoby's The After Show podcast continues this Sunday following ESPN's new 30 for 30 film, Long Gone Summer. Director A.J. Schnack takes viewers back to the landmark 1998 baseball season when the St. Louis Cardinals' Mark McGwire and Chicago Cubs' Sammy Sosa embarked on a chase of one of the game's most hallowed records. It was one of the most significant and memorable seasons in baseball history, told by the stars who lived it and so many others who will never forget it. A reminder that all 30 for 30 films are available on ESPN Plus immediately after airing. Also, I want to remind you about another great ESPN podcast, SB Pod. Scott gets some of the best guests out there, so be sure to check it out. You can download and subscribe to SB Pod now, as well as download and subscribe to The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're going to talk a little bit about what's going on in college football. Also going to talk about Bruce Lee movies. But first, hey, so apparently Thursday night, bunch of dudes who played in the NFL put out a video. Gabe, I don't know if you're noticing this right now, but this is the new thing. Everybody, like these group videos, you know what I mean? You get a whole bunch of your people who do the same thing, and they all read off the same script. Somebody chops it up and makes a video that has lots of visible faces from a particular place telling you how they feel about racismo. What was funny to me about the NASCAR video was, like, it was very much written in the context of, hey, we some white dudes and we gonna listen now, right? Like that was kind of what they're saying, which I think is a message worth hearing, except our man Bubba is also in it, Bubba Wallace. And every time it came around to him, I'm like, yo, I feel like your script need to be different than they script. You know, like I understand that you got some things that you know, kind of figuring out, trying to see where you at, you know, in the world, all that kind of stuff. Like when we had him on the podcast, he was like, I'm black. I'm not as black as some of these other folks, but I'm black. And I couldn't tell if he meant that in terms of being light skinned or in terms of being what they call it, biracial. You know what I mean? But the young man's got some things he's figuring out. But, you know, he's standing up on this. NASCAR had a moment of silence. They had a moment of silence before the race. Did you think you'd live that long where NASCAR had a moment of silence before the race? That's what we had. But anyway, a lot of dudes in the NFL put together one of these videos. And I actually think that this was a big deal, right? Like more has been made about how it got up and how it got edited, but just the simple fact that it got done, what it seemed to be, and I couldn't identify like every single person by face, and they were not all like of the same age necessarily, but there seemed to be a heavy collection of big stars who are in like their fourth year or sooner or less in the NFL, right? So like Michael Thomas, for example, who was the guy that came together on this? Saquon Barkley, they sent it out on his account. Evan Ingram was on there to do their plays for the Giants. Deshaun Watson was there. And most importantly, Patrick Mahomes. The biggest star in the NFL right now. Like the future of the NFL was there. Deshaun Watson fits in a similar category because, Gabe, what have we talked about for a long time? The next generation of star quarterbacks is black. You know, like you go look at it right now, like who the guys are that are in the league that are doing it and that are going to be the dudes tomorrow on top of that. They're black dudes. And so for Mahomes, I wasn't sure if this was the kind of thing that Mahomes would associate himself with just because I don't know that much about like his upbringing and the way that he like views his identification. And what I mean by that is Mahomes is from some little bitty town in Northeast Texas, right? Where Tyler is the big city that is nearby. His father is black. His mother is white. And I imagine that being Patrick Mahomes in that town that he's in or that he grew up in, his experience may be not the same as some of the other cats that grew up around him, right? Like part of this is like skin shade stuff and everything else. But a big part of it obviously is he's the man, right? He's like the best quarterback that's out there. And we see very often the guys who grew up in those situations figuring out like how they identify and where they go, that can go a whole bunch of different directions, right? Like I did not know, or I wasn't sure how personally he associated like what's going on right now with himself, like how closely he tied it to himself. Nah, man, he was out there. He was on it. I talked to my man, Howard Bryan, about this and he made a very good point where he was like, yo, man, his dad was a baseball player in the 90s and there was a real solidarity especially then among like black baseball players in the 90s, right? I mean, they are in small numbers, all that stuff like that, right? Like a black dude who played baseball in the 90s is not going to be detached from any notion or like a personal association with blackness, right? And so my man grew up with his dad in his life. I was like, okay, now all of this makes sense. Like it ties up, but I still wasn't sure. And I was still pleasantly surprised that he would put his name on that video. And the video outright demanded that the NFL say you were wrong, right? Say you were wrong about the way that you handled things in 2016. Say you will not punish players for peacefully protesting at games, right? Say it, right? Stand in it and say it. And I saw that, and I saw people who watched it and were just kind of like, yeah, I mean, what's the big deal? Like, what's this really going to change or anything like that? I'm like, no, I think you're misunderstanding. What about this makes it a big deal? Big time quarterbacks for the longest haven't had a word to say about these things. Like, big time quarterbacks, generally speaking, even through this, overwhelmingly, they don't touch on it. What we're seeing, though, is a younger generation that is far less afraid when it comes to these matters. But by and large, quarterbacks in the NFL have been quiet. And now you've got two of the biggest star quarterbacks who showed up in that video, which I found to be strident in what it wanted from the NFL. You know, I think that it took a measure of courage for those dudes to do that. I also think, like, Gabe, if you're Dak Prescott, do you think they called him to be in this video? Because they called Zeke. You think they called him?
I would think it's kind of like a more the merrier type of thing.
Right.
But you know what? If you don't get the call.
Yes. Yes.
I would be really hurt.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Did they call him? And I ask largely because if you're Dak, you got to be like, damn, are you serious? And the reason he got to say, damn, are you serious is they put this video out the day after Dak gave the police a $1 million donation. Dog, Dak put out this statement. I think it was on Instagram and it went home. Right? Like, yo, we need to be, you know, look out for my people. Like, he seemed very much so to be on the side ideologically with the people who are protesting. But then he came back on the back end and was like, yeah, and here's $1 million donation to the police for training. That's why I'm asking. If you Dak, you do this one day, and the next day, the other cats, including Mahomes and Watson, who he's got to be looking at as his competition, they're like, actually, no, we're going to scrap it out directly with the league. And don't forget, Ezekiel Elliott's in that video. He got Dak's phone number. They was over there kicking it during quarantine. Remember that? Had a little birthday get together. Either they told Dak, this don't look like what we think you into. Or Dak was like, damn, why ain't y'all calling me a little earlier, man? I just got done giving the police $1 million, baby. I just did. A little rough. But this is what it led to. Friday afternoon, 5 o'clock. Or thereabouts, two things happen on the NFL Twitter account. One of them, the NFL retweeted the video that the players made from the NFL account, right? They sent out the players being like, yo, apologize. The NFL distributed that. And then after that, they put out another video. And here's Roger Goodell.
It has been a difficult time for our country. In particular, black people in our country. First, my condolences to the families of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and all the families who have endured police brutality. We, the National Football League, condemn racism and the systematic oppression of black people. We, the National Football League, admit we were wrong for not listening to NFL players earlier and encourage all to speak out and peacefully protest. We, the National Football League, believe Black Lives Matter. I personally protest with you and want to be part of the much-needed change in this country. Without black players, there would be no National Football League. And the protests around the country are emblematic of the centuries of silence, inequality, and oppression of black players, coaches, fans, and staff. We are listening. I am listening. And I will be reaching out to players who have raised their voices and others on how we can improve and go forward for a better and more united NFL family.
Yo, now I want to be clear about something here. If you have only heard this here and you have not seen the video, important context. Raj don't really look happy about doing this.
It kind of looks like a hostage video.
Yeah. Like, that's the most common compare. Raj had a hell of a day, man. Like that I can tell you. Raj had a hell of a day. He got to work. And look, part of what happened here has to do with the players, right? Part of this has to do with them making the video. Yahoo did a story about the rogue, so to speak, employee who put the video together, right? And then got stuff going, at least in terms of the video thing. But the reality is, what really happened to Roger Goodell is an internal revolution of sorts. People who work at the league office had enough. People who work at the league office gave it to Roger. They let him know where they were coming from. Black employees specifically at the NFL brought it to Roger and laid it out. Like, no, this is what we need to do. This is what you need to do. And what their unhappiness was with the way that the league had handled things. That plus the pressure from the players is how you wind up with Roger Goodell putting out this video. Now, does this video change the world? No. But think about how many people, including the NFL, for so many years had so stridently refused to say things like that. Like, think about all the language and the imaging and stuff that's around Inspire Change and all of that. And when they'd ever, somebody from the league would be the one to talk about it. Well, we want to help these guys, you know, change things in their communities, right? All this. And that right there, you ain't talking about racism if you're doing that, because these guys can't fix racism, right? Only white people can fix racism. All black people can do is fight, but they can't fix when it comes to that sort of thing, right? That's just not the way it goes. And so the league has never really explicitly stated, like, yo, racism is a problem. Nowhere from that league specifically did they state, hey, man, Black Lives Matter. But on top of that, we don't have a league without black people. Like, I personally think that those are big, strong statements. And you notice whoever wrote it, they ain't let them hide behind that community. They made them say people, right? Black people, all of those things. No, man, I don't think that's small, right? In the way that I didn't think it was small when they got Jerry Jones to kneel before the game that one time, right? Now, that didn't exactly go the way we thought it might after it happened, but I do think that those symbols have a certain measure of significance, even if they're not the be-all, end-all. I do think that they matter. And this is what happened here with Goodell. Now, I got two things for you to consider on this one. One of them is, at some point, like, when is Roger Goodell's, I don't want to say dignity, right? Because I don't want to get out here and act like I'm, like, challenging this man's manhood or anything. I mean, that's a little bit of an uncomfortable situation. But at the same time, I know he doesn't ride out with what the owners have done here. I know ideologically he is not aligned with them and where we would say their views are if you aggregate them. He's not over there with them. He's the guy that wants Colin Kaepernick to be back in the league. He's a guy that I feel confident, I don't know this is like certainly, but I feel confident saying he wants the hiring situation to coaches to be different. And on top of that, I know this for a fact, he really wants to clean up his legacy, right? He wants to walk out of here and have something like we remember the Goodell era fondly. That is what he wants. The way for him to do that, if that's what he wants, is to stand up and tell the truth, right? The way for him to do that right now is to say, I want Colin Kaepernick back in the league, but I can't get the owners to budge on this, right? All I can say is that this is the thing that I wish to happen, you know, with the coaching situation. You can stand up and say, no, I want this to be better, but it's going to require dedication from all 32 of our owners in order to fix this problem. And as of right now, they have not been as interested in correcting this as I have. You can do this. If that's what you want, if your rep is what you care about, that's what there is for you to do, man. You the man in charge. You got the contract. Maybe they fire you. Okay, what's so bad about that if you can't say what you actually want to say? If you don't have any actual power in running this operation, who cares if they fire you? You got all the money in the world. Yeah, you make $40 million a year. You've been making that bread, man. The dollars that Roger Goodell's spending, he's probably spending, what, 2011 money? 2012 money? You know how long it gonna take before he even get anywhere near that 2019 money? He ain't even touching that stat. No, like, if you want to do this, you are in a position to do it. Like, we all stay out here and we challenge these players, like, oh, take a knee during the game, all this stuff. These guys that are operating with some real risk. We push all these cats about it, right? That's the man that can do it. That's the man that's in a situation in a place of conflict who was in a position to do some measure of flexing. Because I feel like if Roger Goodell says this is what it needs to be, you'll probably have a lot more media people then come in behind him. You can do this, you know? And part of why if it's going to happen, Roger's going to have to be the one to do it. It's very simple. Gabe, let me ask you this. When's the last time you heard anybody associated with the NFL ask an NFL owner a hard question?
Well, that's what Raj is there for, right? They pay Raj to do the dirty work for them, to take the heat. If he were to kind of like turn the tables here and start to deflect, they're going to be pissed. But public sentiment is going to be on Raj's side.
Yep. And I look at it and I see him and I see all of it. And I just see a dude who, if he wants it, is there for the taking. If he wants it, it's right there for him to do. But the second thing I want to point out about that video from Goodell, and this is important, and it'll be like a bit of a running theme, I guess, in some of the stuff we talk about today. The leverage is with the people. Like right now, in a way unlike anything that I have ever seen, the leverage is with the people. And when I say that, I want you to think about this for a second. The New York Times just bounced their op-ed page editor this week. And you may have seen it, but basically Tom Cotton, senator from Arkansas, wrote an op-ed that ran in the Times that said that we should send the military in the streets to handle these protesters, right? That went over awfully, terribly, horribly received. And, you know, a few things came out, everything else, and the man wound up resigning, the head of the editorial board. Found out, among other things, he didn't actually read the column, which is like, wow, okay. But what got him out of there was basically a revolt from staffers. It was people who worked there who made noise at the paper, made noise on their Slack channels and everything else. And they also made noise publicly, at which point they got that dude up out the paint. What you see and happen with the NFL is a very similar thing. Labor, both the players and the staffers that work in the office, they're the ones who got Roger Goodell to do this and to make it happen. I was talking to some people at the end of last week, some like fairly prominent business owners, not like Fortune 500 stuff, but like some people that matter in their world. And they're talking about the discussions that they're having with their employees and trying to figure out like how to talk to their employees about these issues as these employees are pushing them to do more. But the employees are like, yo, where do you stand on these matters? Where do you stand on white supremacy? Where do you stand on defunding the police? Like all of this stuff. And these people in charge who ain't never felt like they had to listen before, they have to listen now. You saw what happened in Minnesota where they talk about disbanding the police. I didn't know you could disband the police. I didn't know that. They just go break up the band. I didn't know that. Okay. Gotcha. Right? Had no idea. It's going to be like Menudo. It's going to be a whole new set of kids out here dancing under the same name. I didn't know that could be done. But the people did that. The people did that. And if you look everywhere, what these companies are doing, these statements that they're putting out, people that are getting themselves tossed out of here for things they might not have got tossed out for before. Gabe, you saw CrossFit and Reebok. Reebok discontinued their relationship with CrossFit because of something the CrossFit dude said, but the CrossFit dude been saying things. Like, this is not necessarily new. You see what happened with Drew Brees? You know what happened there? Like, that was another one with the leverage being the people, because you have to realize Drew Brees is, in effect, like management. Take it to another level. Remember when everybody was afraid of a Trump tweet? Like, you remember when everybody was petrified about Donald Trump tweeting about them. Politicians were petrified about Donald Trump tweeting about them. Companies, like, I mean, you know where I work. Nobody here trying to wind up on the business end of no tweet from Trump. Like, that's a legitimate concern that people running this company and all kinds of other companies also had, was that, yo, Trump's going to tweet about you and it's going to blow this whole thing up, right? Trump tweeted about Drew Brees in the positive, and Drew Brees hit him with a thanks, but no thanks, homie. I got it wrong, and so did you. Nobody's afraid of that anymore, right? Like the idea that the most powerful person in this country, The idea that you might draw his ire in these times doesn't matter. People aren't sweating that anymore. The leverage is with the people. Gabe, I ain't never felt more listened to in my life than I have in like the last week. Like people are concerned and caring about not just the perspective, but like the interest and the like feelings, for lack of a better term, of the people. That's where we are. And I don't think that's going to change, right? Like, I think we are kind of pushing up on that point where, like, for white people, we have all these discussions about race with white people all the time. And it's all fun and games until you get to the, okay, now you're going too far point, right? People gonna need to find out what that point is, because we ain't there yet. And I feel like if you're at a place where they could, where the employees of the NFL office can make Roger Goodell make a video that look like he a hostage, the leverage is with the people in a way that I cannot recall it being. Yo, polls are saying that the folks are like opposed to the police. We ain't never, like white people, we ain't never seen anything like that before, because the leverage in this moment is with the people. And I think that there's a recognition from people up top that the leverage right now is with the people. Roger Goodell demonstrated that for you. It's also something that in your own life you might want to keep in mind.
What's interesting is that the leverage is with the people you're talking about. MLB is going through CBA negotiations.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the time to make a grab for things that you've been asking for in negotiations, like CBA negotiations, but people have been afraid to ask, or people have been afraid to push for it because they've been worried about public sentiment when it comes to a work stoppage, right?
Yeah, I tell you this in general, because the baseball player situation is tricky because they make so much money, right? But in general, now's the time to ask. I'm just telling you, man, now is the time to ask. You got something that you've been thinking about? Now is the time to ask. We'll be back in a minute to talk about what's going on with Iowa football. But first, America's ready to get back to work. But to win in the new economy, you need every advantage to succeed. Smart companies run on NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. With NetSuite, you have visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. Everything you need, all in one place. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in sales, NetSuite lets you manage every penny with precision. You'll have the agility to compete with anyone, work from anywhere, and run your whole company right from your phone. Join over 20,000 companies who trust NetSuite to make it happen. NetSuite surveyed hundreds of business leaders and assembled a playbook of the top strategies they're using as America reopens for business. Receive your free guide, 7 actions businesses need to take now, and schedule your free product tour at netsuite.com/Bomani. Get your free guide and schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/Bomani. netsuite.com/Bomani. So let me tell you something that's interesting about college football. And once college football is really big, but very few people in college football are really big. Does that make sense? So like, for example, like Nick Saban's a guy that we can make a topic about and everybody talk, you know, and that'd be like a national news story. Dabo Swinney, similarly, but not exactly the same, just because the base for Clemson is so small and localized, right? But one thing that's really worrisome when things happen in college sports is that you can get away with doing something awful just as long as you're not that famous to the general public. You can be really famous within college football, but not famous to the general public. And then the question becomes, how much of a draw is a topic about you to everybody else? And that's where I think we are right now with this story with Iowa and Kirk Ferentz. Now, Kirk Ferentz has coached at Iowa for over 20 years. They got 5 top 10 seasons while he's at Iowa, which is a pretty impressive feat. Ferentz also has a really good agent. And I say that because Ferentz's name always comes up in these NFL searches, but you don't ever hear about him actually trying to coach in the NFL, which tells me that his agent just be getting his name out there and all this stuff. I believe he and Belichick have the same agent, for example. But Ferentz, let the world tell it, he's one of the good guys in college football. After all, they built that, you know, they got the children's hospital there at Iowa, Gabe. I don't know if you've seen this, but they they built the children's hospital and the cancer ward is set up for the kids in such a way that it faces the football stadium. And so at one point during the game, everybody in the stadium turns toward the hospital and waves at the kids, right? Like, it's a very nice and it's a very touching thing, but there's also a cynical level to it, that there's branding involved there and how this makes Iowa football look. Well, what we're hearing about Iowa football now is not in line with that. We had, what was it, 50 players over the weekend who said various things on social media about the climate at the University of Iowa and what it was, not just for black athletes, by the way, because black athletes are saying, talking about how the strength coach, Chris Doyle, who is now on leave or suspension or something like that, like one of those, calling them ghetto and saying how, like, if they don't work out, they're going to be, going back to the ghetto. Like, it's all kinds of stuff like that. Like, those sorts of cruel picking on things. There was one white dude who said that he had a learning disorder that had been, like, affecting his grades and stuff like that. And that the strength coach just constantly got on him. Just like, yo, are you too dumb to understand this? You know, like, are you just not smart? Like, it just sounds really abusive as a place and in an unnecessary way, because they're just picking on kids. Right? We're just picking on kids who can't do anything about it. And please understand, a significant part of what's going on at Iowa and the way they run that program is about control. Now, I've got some insight and I know some people who know some things about what goes on there. But even if I did not, the fact that Ferentz lets them send a tweet a month, like, these players in 2020 are not allowed to engage on social media, that when the world started catching fire, he gave them permission to get onto social media. That's control, man. Like, that's all that comes down to, is control. Like, you could say it's about protecting PR and everything else. No, it's not. That's strictly about control. And he's a guy, and his program has been about controlling these players. And then once they're there, belittling them. One player, like the Big Ten defensive back of the year a couple of years ago, said that there are a lot of really good players who never saw the field. Amani Hooker, that's who said it. He said, these stories are new to everyone before the players. We have heard slash seen these far too many times. Trust me, this is the last thing we want to be doing. Too many really good players have never touched the field on Saturday because of how they were treated around the facility, right? You know, so you got the guy I told you about, the white dude who they called Simple Jack. No. It's all bad, right? And so lots of players have had things to say. And then the hammer came down. The hammer came down because a player named Daryl Johnson Koulianos, I believe that's how you say it. I'm really not sure how to pronounce his last name. You'll have to forgive me. They call him DJK around there because we like to make everybody initials these days. And so he played at Iowa about 10 years ago. He wound up being put off the football team after he got arrested for a drug charge. Now, he made some fairly explosive allegations. And for what it's worth, allegations that he had made previously about his time at Iowa. And the big thing for him was, he said as soon as he got there, that Kirk Ferentz and Chris Doyle, the strength coach, immediately didn't rock with him. Now, understand, this dude was flashy. You know what I mean? Like, this dude was a little flashier than Iowa would probably be accustomed to. Like, this dude showing up in shades and all of that stuff. But what he says here was, I was baffled by what was going on in the Iowa program. What had I done as a recent high school graduate to attract such anger and spite from two grown men? Why had they set out to break me? Surely they had dealt with popular players before. You know, he talks about how the strength coaches called him soft, called him all kinds of stuff, called him a brat. And one thing that was interesting about this young man is he was adopted. Like, he's from like some Youngstown, Ohio hood, right? But he's adopted. And he said that the coaches kept talking about how he was like privileged and how he was like silver spoon in his mouth and everything else. And Gabe, that's a wild irony. And that's how, to me, it tells me that there's a level of racism in the way that they deal with these players, which is, if you think they hood, you threaten to send them to the ghetto. If they not hood, you tell them that they got a silver spoon in their mouths, right? They can't win. What level of income your mama got to have in order for him to not say something about where you came from? Well, she got to be comfortably at $75,000 a year to have enough, but not too much money to avoid drawing the ire. But the dude talked more and more just about the way that he had been treated, the abuse. He said that he was made to run around and do a workout with a trash can over his head. And his dude, DJK, who is now a coach at a small school in Pennsylvania, said he never seen or heard about anything that humiliating before, you know, in the punishment workouts or like, you know, running and doing, what is it, log rolls until you literally choke on your own vomit. He says that Ferentz is telling him what clothes he could wear. He's getting pulled into the office by the head coach about what clothes he was wearing. Literally. Yes. That is what we've got here. Tell him to rein it in interviews and everything else. And look, the next level of it on what the young man alleges, and I don't know about this, but the dude wound up getting put off the team because the cops came into his crib and they got him on like 5 counts on drugs, and most of the counts were dismissed. DJK says that he was living with dudes who were selling dope, and that's how he wound up getting caught in it, but the charges against him were dropped. That's his story, that he himself was not selling dope. But he also says that he firmly believes that Kirk Ferentz is the one that dimed him out to the cops. Taking another step further, he says that after one game, his father came up to Ferentz after he felt like Ferentz had been dodging him on senior day, that Ferentz had been dodging his father. He comes up and introduces himself to him. And this is what DJK alleges. He alleges that Ferentz said, quote, "Do me a favor. Tell Daryl I have one more thing in my pocket for him. I want him to worry." And then DJK alleges on top of that, that Ferentz trashed him to the scouts, that he's trying to put together a pro day after he got put off the team and all of that stuff. And that scouts were coming and saying, well, the Iowa guys just told us why we shouldn't even be here in the first place. Okay. I don't know what is and is not true, like definitively. The only part that I kind of have a struggle with is about Ferentz turning him into the police. I'm not saying it didn't happen, but I would admit that that would be like way beyond the pale, right? The other one is telling his father that I want him to worry. Totally possible it happened, though. I want to be clear about that. Totally possible it happened. Totally possible that Ferentz had an ego so big that he believed that he could get away with doing something like that. We'll never find out if that's true. I'm not calling the DJK dude a liar. I'm saying I understand anyone that's skeptical of those particular details. I can get where they are coming from. But I was talking to one guy who had played for Iowa about this earlier today, and he said he questioned that because he's like, it's just not rational that he would do that. But racism isn't rational. You know what I mean? Like, if we are engaging in racist practices, they are not rational. He was like, well, if what you want to do is keep your black players under your thumb, it makes sense. Well, hell, that's rational. Right? Like, what you say right there is rational. What you say right there makes sense. Okay? Now, again, I can't tell you what all Ferentz did and did not do. I'm not, like, fully in a position to tell you about that one. What I can say is this. Prior to this, the allegations against Iowa centered around the strength coach. They were divorced from Kirk Ferentz. They appeared to have a real strong good cop, bad cop situation where Doyle did all the bad cop stuff, right? All of the bad cop stuff. Ferentz from there then claims that he didn't know anything culturally that was going on with his program. He had no idea that Chris Doyle was out here calling these guys ghetto and all of this stuff. No. He didn't know. He said he's heard everything about the culture around his program, and now he's got to take some inventory and figure some things out because he had no idea. All I'm saying is this. The DJK dude, I believe that what he says about Ferentz trying to rein him in, right, and Ferentz telling him how to dress and all of that stuff, I believe that stuff is true. All right, I'm fairly informed on this. I believe that stuff is true. I believe he did those things, okay? You expect me to believe that if Ferentz was out here telling this guy how to dress and all of these controlling type things and the basis on which he seemed to be doing this, that he did not know his strength coach was out here doing this other stuff, or at the very least, that he did not know that his strength coach felt this way about his players? Like, that's what jumps out to me about this in this whole story is you guys hate your players. Why are you doing this job if you hate your players? You want to see an argument for cutting coaching salaries? Right there. Do not make it such that it's financially lucrative for these guys to be around kids they hate. right? Because that's what we got here. Like, if this is the way that you're treating them, the way you're behaving, but are you dumb enough to think that Kirk Ferentz had no idea what his ace, his mans, was doing with these players? Do you think this guy was saying these things about these players to their faces, but didn't say similar things about them to the head coach? Do you think Kirk Ferentz is just such a bleeding heart liberal that Chris Doyle would have to lie about these things when he came around them? Do you really believe that? Because I don't think you believe that. I don't think you believe that for a second. I think you believe that Kirk Ferentz knew damn well what was going on with this program, right? Now, maybe the folks at Iowa wind up with such a problem with it, they make them leave. Maybe the administration, maybe the people, I have no idea. The leverage, again, is with the players. They're the ones that can make something happen if they want to. I don't know how many of the current players got something to say. I don't know how many of them got the heart to go ahead and make it happen. I have no idea on that front, but I'm telling you, it doesn't make any sense that this guy didn't know that this is the way that things were getting down. And it doesn't make any sense how many people are trying so hard to dismiss the latest person to have something to say about Kirk Ferentz. And when is somebody around there going to ask him a hard question about it? Because what DJK says that matters. It's not about saying foul stuff to dudes in the locker room. It's not about saying crazy things. It's not even really about like the overwork stuff, though, that did almost kill some guys a few years ago, right? Like, some of that stuff is bad. I'm not saying it's not. But the part that jumps off the page and the part that everybody needs to watch out for and where Ferentz needs to, like, let's see, the idea that you told NFL scouts, don't take this guy. Right? The idea that you are endangering the financial futures of these dudes because of whatever problem it is that you have. That's indefensible. That is unforgivable. And that to me is 100% fireable if that's the sort of thing you're doing and you're doing it in bad faith. Like, if you're being honest about the guy you talk about or whatever, but if you are just flat out saying, nah, don't do that, you know? Now, if it's on the basis of like, yo, he's been using drugs because this is something he cops to in that letter, okay, tell him that. And then they go talk to him about it, right? NFL teams ain't running away because you use some drugs. You know how many dudes they got in the league, they use drugs. They ain't doing that, right? But if you're out here tanking guys, who else we going to find out he's bad mouthed to the scouts? Who else has he threatened with do what I say or you'll never get in the league because I'll talk you down? That's the meat right there. That's the meat of the power that these dudes have. That's why these kids who are on the team will probably be less likely to say something because they're like, they ain't going to fire Ferentz. So what's going to happen to me after this? That right there is where it gets to be important. You know? So if you want to say, nah, Kirk Ferentz wouldn't call the police on that dude. White folks call the police for everything. What are you talking about? You want to say that Kirk Ferentz won't do that? Okay, cool. Right? You know, you want to say that all 50 of these guys are coming out of nowhere with this. Okay, you could do that if you want, but it is clear that they have a program there that is toxic to the players, to the players. There is reason to think that coaches are actively doing harm to the players at the expense of the larger program, right? More guys in the league is good for you. Good for you. DJK was talking about all these different reasons that Ferentz would bench him, like all these little piddly suspensions that he would give him for quarters or for halves or stuff like that. That's actively hurting everybody and yourself in the course of doing this. And that's how far you'll go to maintain control of your players. This is college. This is what college football can be. Buckle up, man. You're not going to convince me that this is the only cat that's like this. And the reason you're not going to convince me that he's the only cat that's like this is because those players aren't the only ones who are powerless. Therefore, that means that I doubt that Kirk Ferentz or anybody else around him is the only person with bad intentions and too much power.
It goes back to like what you were talking about at the beginning about it being irrational, because it's the same thing with the Rooney Rule.
Yep.
People talking about not wanting to hire like a candidate of color, this and that. They're actively impeding their own success by not hiring the best candidate, but they don't care.
Racism hurts white people so much, but in burst it makes them feel so good, which is to say racism. It's kind of like smoking crack. All right, Gabe, you bought this Bruce Lee? You rock with the Bruce Lee movies?
Yes, I do. I watched the documentary Be Water yesterday. What'd you think about it?
I thought the documentary itself was very interesting. I thought it was good. One, I've never seen a documentary where there are interviews. Like, I've seen video, like documentaries that are all archival footage, but I've never seen a documentary where everything on the screen is archival, but there are interviews that play underneath, but you don't ever see who any of the people are. So I thought that that was very interesting. I think that, you know, I worked with Pablo for a couple of years and stuff. So like the Asian American experience and the history in some ways can be, I don't want to say a blind spot for me, but something I don't know that much about, you know? And so it is interesting to hear some of the things about the particular struggles that Asians have gone through in this country and how it affected Bruce. And I hadn't, because I don't watch a lot of old movies. I've never seen Breakfast at Tiffany's. I had never seen that like ridiculous Asian character that they threw up there. I'm like, damn, that's what they think of y'all. Like, I just, you know, like I didn't grow up in a place with a lot of Asians. So there's a lot of stuff that I just did not think about. So like the idea that Bruce Lee had to go to Hong Kong to make these movies because they weren't going to give him a fair shake in the United States is like a kind of thing that I had never myself really considered, you know? So I thought it was very, very interesting there. And so for me to get ready for the documentary, I'd already seen Enter the Dragon, but I realized I hadn't seen the other ones, so I watched Fist of Fury. Have you seen any of the movies themselves?
It's been like a long time, though. You said that you watched it on Prime, right?
Yeah. Have you seen Enter the Dragon?
Yes.
Enter the Dragon's on Netflix if you guys have not seen Enter the Dragon, and that's one of those you got to fix. Like, Pablo hadn't seen Enter the Dragon. I had to get him to watch it. I mean, honestly, I was trying not to judge him. You know, you riding for the whole crew, but you ain't seen Enter the Dragon. All right, I see. Enter the Dragon is everything, right? Just 100% everything. But you know why Enter the Dragon works so well for Bruce Lee? Enter the Dragon works so well for Bruce Lee because he was doing it by himself. I watched Fist of Fury. I hadn't seen Fist of Fury before. Dog, Bruce is out here with some bums. Like his whole little dojo, I can't believe, man. He was kicking it with a dojo full of suckers. Although, to be fair, and this is why I'd be mad if I was Bruce Lee. And if you ain't seen Fist of Fury, too bad. Those of you who have seen Fist of Fury, you know exactly where I'm coming from on this. You too have probably considered that Bruce Lee was rolling with some suckers in that movie. But I'm just saying, those cats were way more aggressive when they hit Bruce in the head with that shovel at the beginning because he was crying at a funeral than he was when the Japanese dudes came to kick everybody's ass at your whole little school. That's all. Bruce, the only dude at school that got any fight in him. Nobody else. Japanese is sitting up there like, yo, what are we going to do about the school? We going to go in there and we going to kill everybody that was in there. How somebody going to say that about you? They ain't got no guns and you supposed to know how to do kung fu. Like, how a whole squad is supposed to run up on y'all and kill damn near the whole house with their bare hands inside your kung fu school? Y'all ain't got no nunchucks in the back that somebody could come out with. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just don't get this at all, man. Bruce was out there. He went over to their school, whooped all their asses, and had, like, the nunchucks. He was making it happen with the nunchucks. You heard that spinning through the air. And I got a question. I mean, somebody just let me know this, man. You see somebody around you spinning them nunchucks. Why you trying to fight him? I guess them cats didn't know it was Bruce Lee. Right? Like, yo, man, that's Bruce Lee with nunchucks, man. You don't want no parts of that. They didn't know it was Bruce Lee with the nunchucks. But he's still out there spinning them nunchucks. These dumbasses out here trying to fight with him. And no, man, it's a truce. It's a truce. Bruce went in there gangsting them dudes, man, made them eat that little poster the whole nine, man. But he got to stop rolling with these suckers. I mean, just help me out here. Bruce was fighting to save the school. None of these suckers had his back. Bruce had to catch 5 bodies, including people at his school that had betrayed the school. He had to catch all these bodies fighting this out. Only to die at the end by suicide by cop. He had to fight for all of them and then went and died so they could save their little school. A school, by the way, that's going to get took from them. And I know the school is going to get took from them because I watched the movie. Y'all can't fight nobody off without Bruce. He's all you have. I don't understand how Bruce, why did Bruce not leave that school and go to one a little bit more advanced? Like Bruce needed to go to like kung fu prep school. Cause these cats that he was out here with, nah, man, you're not getting the challenge. I just don't see how Bruce got to be so good out here kicking it with them bums that he was out there with, man. He can't be out here. You just can't be out here with bums. Is there anything more implausible, by the way, than in Enter the Dragon? Where somehow that Roper dude beat Bolo in a fight. Like, I ain't really got my money on Bruce in no fight against Bolo. Bolo is Bolo's the ultimate video game boss. I don't want Bolo fold a dude in half put a crease in his back and killed him. You remember that? Bolo picked that dude up and killed him by folding him in half. Roper ain't beating Bolo in no fight. If Roper could beat Bolo in the fight, Roper would have been the heavyweight champion of the world. Like, he just magically showing up at this tournament. If that's what it was, that's like that. That is the ultimate. And see, that's what Bruce was talking about. That racism in the films. That told you everything you needed to know. The fact they had to put that white man in that movie and act like he could beat Bolo was everything that Bruce Lee had to fight against. And that's even after he went to Hong Kong in order to make that damn movie. You know? I recommended this, by the way, just in case. If you ain't never seen no Bruce Lee movies before, I will make a suggestion. Everybody watches Enter the Dragon first. I obviously watch Enter the Dragon first. Do not watch Enter the Dragon first. Because watching Enter the Dragon first, like, it's so good in every way, it might mess up the way that you see, like, you know, the other stuff. It might. It's so cruel that he died before it blew up, isn't it? It's so cruel that he died. And he was just so cool. Like, that was one thing I got from all the archival in it that I didn't really just have a great grasp of. Because, you know, the hood loved Bruce. Like, black folks love Bruce Lee. I didn't quite understand the connection at that time. You know, like the idea that they had him like in the, like he was in the streets of Seattle, like figuring out what the cool stuff was, like what the brothers was up to. You know, like I did not get that Bruce Lee is kind of like the central node. Everybody rocks with Bruce Lee. I told you, he's my fitness goals, man. That's what I'm trying to do. By the time this all done, I'm trying to come out here looking like Bruce Lee, baby. It's the only chance I got. I ain't that big. You know what I'm saying? Get that V action, wear them hammer pants.
Puts the flex on, right? But yes. Then he dips his hands yes. over. And then yes. that's when it's just like, dude looks like an Olympic swimmer.
Yes. He got the angel wings, right? He got the angel wings. Like his, like that's what I'm out here trying to get to. And I'm getting there too, dog. I'm getting there. That's right. That's right. I felt the fabric from my pants on my inner thigh for the first time, perhaps in my whole life.
Now, do you own a pair of nunchucks? Because we have talked about nunchucks on the
podcast. Yeah, I do not own a pair of nunchucks. And apparently nunchucks are illegal to own in New York City. Because they said remember they said it was a rash of nunchucking? Yeah, and I'm convinced it wasn't no rash. All you had to get was two of them before somebody was like, yo, no more nunchucks. No more nunchucks. But I want them. I wish you would break in my house and I had some nunchucks. I'm coming right for you, baby. Whoo, can you imagine? Like, and that was the thing. Like, normally when cats got the nunchucks in the movies, you notice nobody, like, nobody really gets hit. It just kind of moves people away. And Fist of Fury, these dudes were running up on the nunchucks. Those are the dummies that killed everybody in the house. Y'all lost a fight to a dude that don't. Let's go.
Imagine connecting with a nunchuck.
Ooh. Some guy in my mention said that he really dug Michelangelo from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles when he was a kid.
Oh, hell yeah.
So his dad got him some nunchucks, but he accidentally got him real nunchucks. And he said all it took was him. I think he knocked his brother's tooth out and he somehow injured himself before dad was like, nah, it's rapping on nunchucks. It's a billy club on a chain.
It's a super weapon.
Yeah, honestly, I'm so glad nobody ever told the police about nunchucks. Woo! 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 Bad news, especially in the hands of Bruce Lee.
We know you can't be on top of all the news and information of the day. No need for the social media feeds. We got you. Now, if you haven't heard.
All right, Bo. So this first story comes from security.
Sloppy Meyer Fast Company. You've seen the graduation yard signs in front of homes throughout your neighborhood. They celebrate the accomplishments of high school, middle school, elementary school, and even preschool students. Many of these pre-printed lawn decorations include the first names or first and last names of the kids. And that's the problem. The yard signs are a way to publicly salute kids of all ages who can't have real graduation ceremonies due to COVID-19 shutdowns. But they're also catnip for scammers who take the children's names to the bank, literally. Con artists use stolen identities to take out loans, open new credit cards and spending accounts, commit tax fraud, get health care, and upgrade utilities. This leaves the children with destroyed credit histories. More than 1 million kids under 18 become the victims of identity theft every year, according to experts, and research has shown that identity theft spikes during an economic downturn. Nothing is juicier to identity thieves than information about children. It takes years before anyone realizes their social security numbers have been snatched. The truth comes out when they're old enough to apply for credit cards or get their own cell phone accounts. Even without a child's social security number, plenty of damage can be done. Some scammers blend bits of real and made-up information to craft new fake identities. That's called synthetic identity theft. From lawn signs, they can garner a first and last name, address, and approximate year of birth. Let's assume 5 or 6 years old for a kindergarten grad or 17 or 18 for a high schooler.
Damn, that's messed up.
This story is wild, man. This story is wild. I've always been like a little bit surprised when not only do you see lawn signs, but then something I've noticed, at least in Connecticut, and reach out to us and let us know if you've seen stuff like this, but I've seen local high schools have banners of all the graduates and where they're going to school. Hey, congratulations on, you know, class right. of 2009 or whatever, going to X school. In light of this, damn, that's a lot of information.
Yeah, man. But how dedicated to the con do you have to be on the internet looking for kindergarten graduations to get a new name of a new victim? Whenever you meet somebody that's just full on dedicated to the con, it's just always amazing. I told you a story about the time my brother used to kick it with this dude who smoked crack when he was in college, right?
I don't think so.
All right. So my brother's in the car. He's with this dude. We had like two or three master's degrees or something like that. And was like still around town. But at, I already told you, you know, his Achilles heel, that rock. So anyway, my brother says he's driving the car. The dude in the back seat, he in the middle, like in the back. And my brother's driving and he skids a little wet. He skids. And so it's like the skid before you stop. And they're in the skid and he's like, oh, you know, bracing all that stuff. And he stops just short. But he looks back and old buddy's getting back in his seat. My brother's like, dog, what are you doing? He's like, oh man, if you had hit that car, I was just going to jump through the window. Like the windshield. He's going, like, that was his plan. He was going to jump through the windshield. But the fact that he had a plan in that moment, how are you that dedicated to the con?
I mean, for this, you don't even have to be that dedicated. You just drive through the neighborhood.
No, I get you. But the idea that you saw like a kindergarten graduation and you were like, oh, new victim.
Saw it as an opportunity.
Yeah, that I consider a dedication to the con, right? That your first thought upon seeing happy children is not good for you. It is, ooh, good for me.
I mean, it's ridiculous how much you can triangulate as far as information there.
Yes.
People have to be more careful, man.
I just feel like those same people could get similar money if they would just go get a job. I know there ain't that many of them right now, but damn. I ain't real big on that go get a job talk, but I hear that. And I'm like, why don't you go get a job? Start a legitimate business.
Oh, my God. All right. This next one comes from Nuptials.
This is Matthew Allen, writer from The Griot, coming at you live and in living color from Brooklyn, New York. This past Saturday, June 7th, the beautiful Black West Indian couple of Kelly Ann and Michael Gordon got married in Philadelphia. And as their first act of husband and wife, the newlyweds stepped outside to protest for justice. The couple stepped off the altar and walked outside of the Logan Hotel right into a crowd of thousands rallying for justice for George Floyd and countless other black victims of police violence at Benjamin Franklin Parkway. It was a memorable moment during the eighth day of demonstrations in Philly on behalf of Floyd, an unarmed black man who was killed on Memorial Day, May 25th, by Minneapolis police officers. The protesters cheered as the two came out of the hotel in tuxedo and wedding gown and kissed right in the middle of the street. The Gordons knew that the protest would most likely happen, but decided to keep their wedding day anyway. They were planning to do a larger party in 2021, given the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. Mrs. Gordon called it a very powerful moment, saying, quote, "Not only are we feeling the moment of the people, but I'm meeting my husband on our wedding day as a strong black man and a good representative of who we are as people, what our men are like, and what our culture is like. It's just a very, very empowering moment for us, considering all that's happening at one moment in one time."
Yo, the Griot got the most extra people. They got another one. These had a line names. The Griot, yeah, you ain't about to be monotone working for the Griot. That is not what they're here for. And all that Black is Beautiful stuff he was talking about is cool. I had a completely different thought when I saw this story, which is I myself have never been married, right? But you know, there's this long, like, mythology of sorts in America when we talk about weddings and people getting married and all that stuff. The wedding night, you know what I mean? Like, everybody always talks about, oh, the wedding night. But then people who actually get married all say the same thing, which is, no, by the end of the day of your wedding, all you're going to want to do is go to sleep. You're going to be tired. You're not going to have the wedding night that you dreamed of, right? That's how most of my people who have had a wedding or whatever, especially the ones who live with the person before they got married, they're like, old hat, you know, all of that stuff. Okay, cool. All I'm saying is this, me personally, if we got the energy after this wedding to go out here and protest, nah. Let's take it back to the shack. Let's go back to the crib. You want to get something to eat? We can get room service, whatever it is. But if it's about like, no. The revolution will take care of itself without me. Yes, that beautiful black couple. Congratulations, Kellyanne, whoever the other one is. That is not how I'm spending my wedding day. I do not love y'all, us, them nearly enough. No. No, sir, Rebob.
I felt like what we learned from this was that the couple actually didn't get married at the protest. They got married at a church, and their first act as a married couple was to protest, which is kind of a little bit different than maybe the way that people read it on social media, was that they had gotten married specifically at the protest.
Yeah, whatever works. We taking it. No, this ain't all the things that we could be doing right now. I'm taking a day off in the revolution. Sorry.
My wife and I, our first act as a married couple was to take a nap.
That's what I'm saying. You know what I mean? That's what I hear. And no, we're not. No, we're not doing this. We're not coming here.
If that is your first act as a married couple, how are you going to have enough energy to go out that night and have fun?
And on top of that, you know, you can't bet on the thing not working. But if the thing don't work, you're going to hate the protest for the rest of your life. Every time you look on the streets, you're going to be thinking about, that dude I used to be married to.
Oh, boy. All right. This last story comes from politics.
This is Danielle Paquette, the West Africa bureau chief for The Washington Post. When Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and other top Democrats took a knee Monday on Capitol Hill to honor the life of George Floyd, the internet's eyes jumped to the colorful fabric draped around their shoulders. Kente cloth, woven with vibrant strips of silk and cotton, comes from Ghana, where people wear it to show patriotism or celebrate a special occasion. It's associated with royalty, pride, and black identity. Why did the Democrats sport it while unveiling a broad police reform bill? Congresswoman Karen Bass, who chairs the Congressional Black Caucus, explained it this way. The significance of the Kente cloth, she said, is our African heritage. And for those of you without that heritage, who are acting in solidarity. The sartorial statement quickly went viral, sparking strong reactions on social media. I know we are in unexpected times and anything is possible. But listen, man, I did not have Pelosi and Kente cloth on the bingo card, wrote one editor in Ohio. Even Questlove chimed in. Everyone was texting me these Kente cloth photos, the drummer for The Roots tweeted. I had to come here to make sure The Roots weren't pranking me. Across the Atlantic, some in Ghana followed the buzz with a mix of appreciation and skepticism. I saw that and I was like, wow, said Jermaine Nkrumah, the head of a television network in Ghana's capital. The optics look good, but what happens when the cameras go away? He said he wants to see more action. There's always this elevation of emotion in the United States, he said. Then it dies down and everything reverts back to normalcy. We want it to be different this time. After video surfaced of a Minneapolis police officer kneeling on the neck of Floyd before his death, protesters marched in Ghana. The government held a memorial service for the slain American. Another hashtag emerged, Africa for Black Lives. On Tuesday, ahead of Floyd's funeral in Houston, Ghana's president planned to send his family a special gift, Kente cloth from the West African country.
All right, so this is what I want to say. Okay, make sure I got this right. The Congressional Black Caucus offered the Kente cloth to everybody, right?
That's what the story says.
The story is that it was their idea. I have no idea. I imagine that they had to have some significant role in it because white folks wouldn't know where to get all this Kente cloth so fast, right? Like, that was my question. Like, somebody just have it laying around. Was there a rush order for the special occasion? You know, whatever it was. All I am going to say is this, because a lot of us have been ridiculing the whites about, yes, the whites. They have been ridiculing white people about wearing these Kente cloth and how it is pandering and so forth and so on. At the same time, what did I say earlier? I ain't never felt more listened to in my life. And I'm just telling you, if the CBC presented this idea and said, I think we should wear Kente cloth, this is not the week for the white people to say no. This is the week where they just got to go ahead and put on this Kente cloth. We probably find some clips of some of them in the elevator with each other like, dog, what are we doing? Look at this. This is ridiculous. You're not going to convince me that they don't all realize that this is, in fact, ridiculous. But if the CBC say that y'all going to do it, it's the least they could do right now. I saw a video the other day. I think it had something to do with like Pentecostal church stuff, but still, it was in Cary, North Carolina. It was white people washing black people's feet. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. It's a different time, and if the black folks said to Nancy Pelosi, put on this Kente, then this Kente gonna get rocked. That's all I got to say about that.
All that needs to be said.
That's right.
Hey, this is Bomani. You have reached the right time voicemail. Say whatever you want. Get creative with it. But this is your place to talk back to the show. So talk back. Peace.
All right, Bomani. So we're about a week late on this, but I thought that it held up really well for a voicemail segment. Would you mind explaining for the people the situation with Virgil Abloh?
People were putting money on a bail fund, and someone put on $50. It was like, I'm putting on $50. Can you match me putting on $50? Virgil Abloh decided to do that. Except Virgil Abloh, Mr. Off-White, right? Creative director at Louis Vuitton, $50. He put up $50. And wasn't this after he was complaining about the people looting and busting up his buddy's store in Beverly Hills or something like that? But he put up $50, and so everybody instantly recognized the cheapness of it, and they're just killing him for putting up $50. You all this rich, all this money, and you put up $50 to get some people out and told people about it. That's the thing. If you just put up $50, that'd be one thing. But you told people about it. Almost kind of stunting with it.
And so at the same time, Drake had given like $100,000, and Virgil Abloh had come back and said that all he was doing was matching something and that he went on to actually donate more. But that's beside the point. He was stunting, given $50. So we thought it would be funny to put out to the people to see what kinds of voicemails we could get of people stunting when they didn't really have it. So none of the people wanted to put their names to their stories, but our first I thought was pretty interesting. Check it out.
Hey, Bomani, I had this one friend, and we would go out to eat sometimes. Sometimes we go to like fancy restaurants and stuff like that. But this one time, I remember we went out, and we went to like Burger King or something. You know, I got a simple combo, nothing more than maybe $10. And my man was like, Kendall, don't worry, I got this one, man. I got this one. You ain't got to worry about it. Drops the $10 on the counter, gives it to the lady. We eating fine. I kid you not, for about the rest of the year, anytime he would want me to do something for him, hey, remember that one time I got you Burger King? Bro, it was only $10. What do you mean? Like, I could have paid for that. Matter of fact, I did. Like, what? Oh, man, tripping.
Remember that time I got you a Whopper?
I mean, that's the type of stuff that you like hold over your friends in high school when you have like off-campus lunch.
Yes.
I will admit I've been guilty of that.
That's how you get out of gas money. Ain't no gas money, man. Remember that?
There's always that one friend that like conveniently is like, oh, yo, I don't have it today.
Yeah.
Would you mind picking up my tab? And then collecting on that becomes a whole nother ordeal.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right, this next one, that guy also didn't leave his name. Another funny one.
Man, Bo, okay, I got to tell you, man. My fam and I always bring this up. We got someone in our family, man. He thinks he's balling. Always inviting everybody to a two-bedroom crib. But one day he took it to the next level. My man went out and wanted to tell us all in a group message that he got a license plate that said Touch of Class for the new purchase he made. What was the new purchase? That's right. A Kia Sportage. My man put Touch of Class on a Kia Sportage. Brother hasn't lived that down in about 15 years, man.
He got a personalized play for a Sportage?
Touch of Class, baby.
Just a touch. The most delicate touch.
I guess the only Touch of Class on that car was the license plate then.
I mean, a Kia is a very nice automobile.
That's kind of like when somebody's got like a super nice stereo in high school. Touch of Class. All right, this last one, another guy didn't leave his name. Another funny one.
I used to work at the Foot Locker back in high school, and this one night we had a dude come in, and he, you know, he looking a little shady, a little tweaky white guy is what he was, if we can just be honest. And he comes in, he's looking at Jordans, he's looking at tracksuits, and he's waiting for someone to talk to him. So finally, someone goes up, one of my buddies, hey, how you doing? What can we get you? And the guy starts telling us about how he just won the lottery. He won't tell us how much he won, but he won the lottery. So he's picking out Jordans. He's got a pair of ones. He is just going bananas in there. And then when it comes time to pay, credit cards declined. Starts talking about, I got to go pick up my check, and I got to go figure everything out. Anyway, but we never heard from that dude again.
I won the lottery. The last thing you'd want anybody to know if you actually did it.
Having to leave with that full cart by the register? Talk about, like, most embarrassing thing ever.
Oh, man. It's not going to make fewer people ask you for money. But all right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Thank you to our sponsor, NetSuite. Also, thank you to Zlati Meyer of Fast Company. Check out her story on scammers getting over on kids who just graduated from their yard signs. Also, thank you to Matthew Allen of The Griot. Check out his story on a husband and wife going to protest right after they got married. And thank you to Danielle Paquette of The Washington Post. Check out her story on the Democrats putting on the kente cloth at thewashingtonpost.com. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.